The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for joining us on the Brad Sessmatt Show alongside Haley Stasiak. I'm Jordan Hamm. We have a great show for you. Merrill Hodge will join Brad to talk about his new book about concussions and the science behind it. Really interesting stuff there. Michael Fabiano will be answering your fantasy football questions each and every week. He brings it, helps you out with your teams every single week. And then in Talk to the Lopes, we have Thunder Dan Marley coming in, the men's basketball head coach. It's always fun when him and Brad get together. So a lot of really good stuff here on the Brad Sessmatt Show. But Haley, let's jump into some of the news and the notes from today. This rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And Haley, Arizona Coyotes on a bit of a hot streak right now.
Yeah, they've won four straight now, have outscored opponents 20-4 in the last four games. Now, I think the key part here is the return of Alex Galchenyuk to this lineup. He was out the first couple weeks of the season. He's only been back for 1 week, and his impact has been felt for sure. I spoke last year about how the Coyotes' first half of the season, that 17-18 season, was going to probably turn around. Everything that I was seeing from NHL experts was saying, hey, don't be down on them. The second half, they're going to come out. They're going to do something. They sure did. I remember these conversations I was having with Brad, like, hey, don't doubt them. Don't doubt them. Like, there's something there. There really is. And there was. Mm-hmm. And they did come out in that second half. Then in this offseason, I kind of said the same thing. Brad's like, hey, like, I don't know. And I'm like, no, like, I think there's something there. And obviously a tough start to the season. They didn't do great there. But things are clicking now. And it's interesting to see how when the pieces come together, because there have been some injuries. Galchenyuk's out. Jacob Chychrun is out. When those pieces start to come back together, it's amazing how this team has turned around.
Yeah, and I think, especially with the start that they had last year, what they started like 0-11, I think everybody, every time a goal was given up, it was like, all right, here we go again. But they...
Now they're just scoring goals out the wazoo.
Yeah, the past four games, they've outscored opponents 20-4. They're giving up the least amount of goals in the NHL right now. So it's really hard to win when you aren't able to score the puck. So obviously a really good telling sign for the Coyotes. And the second least amount given up is the Avalanche, and that's five more goals than the Coyotes right now. So 26 for the Avalanche, 21 for the Coyotes. So off to a great start.
And this is their best record in the month of October since 2013. So 5 years. It's good to kind of see a pro sports team doing some good things here in 2018.
Yeah, and getting off to a hot start. Yes. College football playoff was released, and I don't think many surprises in terms of kind of where everybody's, looking at the rankings. Our friend of the program, the professor Paula Bovin, on that committee. Good job,
really
Paula.
Really cool to see her. I saw on Twitter they were all entering their hanging up their hats, and really cool to see her out there.
So right now it's Alabama is the one, Clemson, LSU, and Notre Dame. The only one loss team in there is LSU. And again, I don't feel like there are a ton of surprises. And it's one of those, I mean, obviously, as the season progresses, this takes more shape. Obviously, it'll kind of figure itself out. But I don't think there's a lot of debate right now, because LSU's only loss was against Florida. They have arguably the biggest win in college football, a 20-point win over Georgia, who's ranked at 6, and then another ranked win against Mississippi State. Down the line, you then have Michigan, Oklahoma, Washington State, Kentucky, Ohio State. All of them have one loss, but I don't feel like those losses necessarily match up to LSU, or they have as big of a win as LSU does against Georgia.
Yeah, and I mean, Notre Dame, I think there was some 3-4 right there, questions on that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Notre Dame's undefeated season hasn't come against crazy good teams yet. I mean, they're getting into this last half. They've got a lot of road tests coming up. And obviously, we all know that I'm a big Notre Dame fan. I was in San Diego, saw them against Navy last week, and that was a big win. But I completely agree with you with that one loss to Florida. Florida's kind of been an up-and-down team this year. You don't really know what you're going to get with Florida. But to get that commanding win against Georgia, obviously, was huge.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the trump card. And, you know, when you're looking at Notre Dame, a win against then number 5 Michigan, a 7-point win, that's a really nice win. And a win against a up and down Stanford team, a decisive win against an up and down Stanford team. But I have a feeling if Notre Dame runs the table, they'll have no issue going in. They'll have a couple ranked wins. I have a feeling Stanford's going to bounce back and be ranked when it's all said and done. Right now, their only ranked game remaining is against Syracuse, number 22. Mm-hmm. But again, I feel like with the independent, you never really know with the mid-major, you know, UCF from last year and kind of the not mid-majors, but the more independent and non-Power 5 schools.
Right.
You never really know, but I feel like Notre Dame has certainly positioned themselves nicely.
I was around for that undefeated 12-0 national championship game, and talking, if you know the Stasiak family, you know how
we are all about
Notre Dame, and I was talking to my dad about the whole, hey, if they go to national championship, are you going? And he's like, not if they play Alabama. So that's settled there. But I think you've got such, like, Alabama, Clemson, LSU, like, it's not going to be easy for Notre Dame to crack this.
Yeah. And as we're looking at this right now, Pac-12 schools, number 10, Washington State, and number 16, Utah right now are the only two from the Pac-12.
Washington State's come out this year.
Yeah. They've,
love,
I mean, aside from a bad game against USC, you know, they definitely be in the conversation, and they still certainly are. I think if they win the Pac-12, they certainly have a case to be made, but Pac-12 is just kind of, especially the Pac-12 South has kind of cannibalized itself this year. So, but we're looking at Utah, number 16, ASU taking on the Utes this weekend.
Homecoming weekend.
Yeah, coming off of a big win at USC. We saw on Monday Herm Edwards talk about the importance of winning at USC because you're in LA. A lot of the big time recruits are there checking out USC, but also probably getting a look at Arizona State as they're coming in. And sure enough, a couple hours later, Chad Johnson Jr., the 2020 wide receiver, yes, son of that Chad Johnson.
I know, that's exactly, actually, I saw that name and I was like, Ocho Cinco.
Yeah. So, but a very, very accomplished wide receiver.
Yeah.
He's the kind of the leader of that 2020 class early on. And that's one thing that ASU and, you know, Al Luganbill and Herm Edwards both kind of talked about. They said, look, 2019 probably going to be like a wash when it comes to these top flight guys because they got so in so late on the recruiting trail. They still have a chance to get some, especially some of these in-state guys. A few of the top ones are still considering Arizona State. But right now they're getting in early on these commits. You know, they're usually a first offer, first Power 5 offer, that sort of thing. But they're putting together a pretty nice class. I think a fine class is the word that I heard Jason Jewell use when he was with Brad. It's fine, and same goes for Arizona. But to certainly get Chad Johnson Jr. For that 2020 class, a class that they're already trying to target, that's obviously a huge get for them to start.
Well, and
off.
You mentioned just getting the win at USC. Not only is it just getting the win at USC, it's finally getting that win on the road for the Sun Devils. So, I mean, we've got a couple weeks still left of the regular season here to play, and it's going to be interesting to see, especially you talked about Pac-12 South has cannibalized themselves, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Rare couple of afternoon games for Arizona State.
Games. I'm not a big fan of night games. Growing up, it was like we went out and tailgated at 6 a.m., 7 a.m., and then it was like a 3:30 game, and you had time to relax in the evening and catch up on all the news from the day. I don't like night games. You waste all day. You're like, okay, when is this game going to start? And yeah.
Well, it's now at a time of year.
I'm not sure I really like noon games either, though.
It's
mid-afternoon.
It's now at a time where people will not spontaneously combust when stepping outside. So next two games are at home against Utah, against UCLA. Those are both afternoon games. Then on the road against Oregon, we'll see how Oregon bounces back over these next couple of weeks after a tough loss to Arizona, and then Territorial Cup. So before you know it, the college football season will be over, but plenty of movement can still happen for ASU. Three of the next four games against the Pac-12 South, and then obviously that road game against Oregon. So a lot of interesting stuff there. Coming up next, Merrill Hodge will be sitting down with Brad Sesmat to discuss his new book. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show.
Merrill Hodge is with us as we're talking about the book Brainwashed. A couple other questions I'll let you go. You write about CTE and substance abuse, that there is a link that football alone does not cause CTE. This is pretty deep, heady stuff, but you've got the doctor, the science to support that. Putting this in the book, was this a difficult step for you to do, to take these thoughts and put them down on paper?
Well, listen, yes, in some way globally, so that people could understand it and we could make it simple. That was a challenge. But what the evidence, the scientific evidence is really strong in, is there are a lot of variables that could contribute. And listen to my language, that could contribute. That's all you see in the science paper. Nothing says this causes it. You play football, you're going to get A. There's no science on that. They start putting variables like, age, obesity. Obesity is such a big one. I it's almost in every neurodegenerative disease known to mankind. Almost every disease, from cancer, heart disease, cardiovascular disease. I mean, it's a critical role in all of it. That always pops up. You know, sugar, inflammation, and like those things are really controllable. You know, we can do something about those things. You know, genetics, opioids, drugs, alcohol, all those things, aside from the genetics, you know, we do have choices and we can help ourselves with, which in the book we try to help empower people too, which is the lifestyle you can create, how you reduce inflammation, things that help that, help with obesity. Activities is a big part of staying healthy. So the book is largely about that type of stuff. You know, there's been too much doom and gloom. We want to be exciting sports. Youth sports are so much fun. I'm telling you, I wished I could make a living coaching youth football. I'd still be doing it. Greatest thing I've ever done in sports. But when you see a kid smile at you through that face mask after they did it right and they felt it, and you're like, man, game's over, you're devastated, you lost, and you listen to the kids and they're like, hey, who's gonna get pizza? Hey, you wanna go to my house? I'm like, oh my gosh, this is exactly how it should be. We had fun and they're off to playing and pizza. I'm like, man, just love just new sports. And if the kids wanna have a passion to play, hopefully you'll read the book and it'll help you with that choice if you choose to let them play sports.
Before I get you out of here, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what's going on out here in Arizona. You know, it's a team that is struggling mightily. They've let go of their offensive coordinator. They have a new quarterback, a rookie that's come in here. They're not winning much. It's a tough product to watch. What's your overall view of what's going on out here for a team that had a good extended stretch, granted, with Carson Palmer and others?
Yeah, you know what? Well, you give me 2 years ago, I used to watch tape on every team, and I don't want to be that analyst who's just watched some game, to watch some TV and some highlights and give you a fair assessment. Because I used to always say TV lies and highlights really lie. And it always bothered me that analysts come in, get a statistic, you know, and then they start making an observation without studying tape. And I'll be honest with you, I don't really know. Here's what I do know that can be a problem with anything. When you have turnover and you have change, fitting philosophies into personnel can be a challenge. You know, that's kind of what's gone on. That's some of the things that could be a problem with the Cardinals. Now, why do some teams, I remember when Chuck Noll retired, Bill Cowher came in. And we have the best record in football. We probably should have went to the Super Bowl that year. We just laid an egg in the playoffs, but we had the best record in football. We had one of the best teams in football. And the year before, we were 8-8. But what really kind of changed it when Bill came in is we tweaked our philosophy just a little bit to fit the strength of our personnel. He had great coaches around him. Listen to the defensive staff: Dom Capers, Dick LeBeau, Marvin Lewis, and obviously Bill Cowher.
It's getting it done.
That was our defensive staff. So, you know, I think that can obviously be a part. You got a young kid playing, you know, quarterback too. There's a lot of newness there, a lot of unfamiliarity. And those growing pains can be severe. And I know they're going through it right now. But, you know, you got good core people in that organization. You know, you'll see improvement this year. I don't expect it to be long. But when you do all of those things, then you lose a coordinator, that's always very disruptive, you know, and it's kind of hard to rebound throughout the year when you do those kind of things. But that kind of learning process can truly help you for next year.
Last question before I let you go, and that is, what has been the feedback to this book? I've seen the New York Times op-ed piece that you penned. What's been the overall feedback?
Brad, I'm going to give you – I've never met you. I know nothing about you, but you are the type of people in the media we need more of. You did the one thing that have nobody has done that has evaluated this book, mentioned this book, talked about this book in a negative manner. Nobody's read it. Everybody, I did a USA Today article, and she never read the book. And I was like, well, how do we talk about the book if you didn't read the book? Yeah. She'd already had her mind made up. She had an agenda. And I was like, I just don't know how you can be a journalist and not read the book if you're going to evaluate the book. I'm finding that very hard to believe. So I credit you, because that's ultimately what we're trying to get out of this too, is this has been so one-sided and negative and scary. And honestly, the science doesn't say that. I mean, we need collaborative efforts. We need a lot of good minds worked on this. Every other neurodegenerative brain disease has collaboration. Only this one doesn't. It only comes out of Boston University. Now, that just doesn't look – that didn't look right anyway. You know, that should – the science world already frowns on that. So I don't know – you know, emails aren't included right now. We have cases of CTE. Listen, we've only had – there's only 300 cases in the medical journal. Well, I don't know. I mean, the book, we talk about that. But in the New York Times alone, there's been 333 articles on the subject. So we got more articles written in one resource than we have cases in the world. Like, you know, and we got people running around thinking, if I get a concussion, I'm going to get CTE. And there's absolutely no scientific evidence of that. Subconcussions are not even scientific. It's really a made-up thing. They haven't done the science steps to confirm how you even evaluate that, because it could be anywhere from playing on a football field to jumping on a trampoline. Well, if that's the case, we're all doomed. That's why, you know, you need to read the book, and you did a heck of a job with the type of questions that you need. People want answers to, and that helps them make decisions. A much more strong way to make decisions with all of the evidence there versus something might scare you on in a headline.
The name of the book is Brainwashed, The Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football. Merrill Hodge. Merrill, appreciate the time. Good luck with the book.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate your time. Good luck to you.
There's Merrill Hodge there with us for a couple of minutes. Appreciate his time on the show. Sports360AZ.com. All right, Tam Niall, as always, and I love having a segment like this with Michael Fabiano, because there's breaking news all over the place. NFL Network, NFL.com, the Hall of Famer, all things fantasy football. We've had two trades today, Demaryius Thomas and Golden Tate. There may be more. There may not be on this trade deadline day. So let's just get right to it, partner, because I'm sure you may get pulled off the phone and onto the set there at the NFL Network. Let's go with Demaryius Thomas first. What do you make out of this deal for fantasy fans?
Well, first off, it's pretty ridiculous that he actually plays the Broncos this week, right? You go, like, from being traded to a revenge game against the team that just traded you. I think it's a good thing for Demaryius Thomas. He's been very inconsistent this season. Now he goes to Houston, where he'll be the number two behind DeAndre Hopkins. He'll have a better quarterback throwing him the football in Deshaun Watson. I'm not saying he's going to get back to elite status like he was when he had Peyton Manning throwing him the football, but Demaryius definitely sees a little bit of an uptick in this trade. The biggest winner here, though, is Courtland Sutton. And if he's a free agent, go out and get him now. And if you have to put in a waiver claim, do that now. He is an absolute playmaker who has a ton of upside in this offense. And now he's going to see far more snaps, far more targets. And this kid could end up being a league winner for you for the rest of the season. So if Sutton is a free agent, put in a waiver claim for him right now. He is that good.
Wow, listen to you. I mean, that's... coming from you, that's strong. I don't like to make this about me, but I'm going to. I have DeAndre Hopkins. Okay, I'm not that happy right now. I know Will Fuller got hurt, but should I be concerned if I'm a Hopkins owner?
No, I don't really think so. Not at all. Hopkins is still going to get his. He's going to see, you know, 8+ targets every single week, and the rapport is clearly still much better with Watson. Watson needs to gain that rapport with Demaryius Thomas over the coming weeks. So this doesn't affect New Hopkins at all.
Okay, let's go over to Golden Tate, getting traded from Detroit to Philadelphia. What do you make out of that one?
Yeah, this one kind of stinks. Well, unless you have Kenny Galladay or Marvin Jones, in which case you're probably dancing in the streets right now, because now both of those guys are guaranteed to see more work. I think T.J. Jones will mix into the slot. Don't know that he's worth a waiver wire pickup, but if you go to Philadelphia, well, now you've got Alshon Jeffrey, when he potentially loses some targets in that offense. You add Golden Tate. Nelson Aguilar is droppable at this point. And Golden Tate's already had a bye. So if you had Golden, you were ready to fire him up this week. Now you lose him for the second week in the first 9 weeks. And that one stinks. And with Tate now being in Philadelphia, it really helps the value of Carson Wentz. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I would say Tate goes from like a high wide receiver two in a PPR league to more of a lower wide receiver two. I will tell you this, though. Adding Golden Tate means one thing. The Eagles are going to throw the football. They have no running game. So if you need to pick up a hot free agent this week and Corey Clement's on your roster or Wendell Smallwood's on your roster, I would have no problem cutting ties with either one of those running backs.
Okay, if you're a Zach Ertz owner, because I'm getting questions about Zach Ertz and Tate coming in. A couple guys said, I've got Ertz, but Tyrell Williams is sitting there on the waiver wire. What does Michael think? Should I move on from Ertz to Tyrell Williams? I don't know if I'd go that far, but
Ertz is going to be fine. He is certainly the most popular target in the pass attack for Carson Wentz. That's not going to change.
Okay, so don't make that move. Let's go to the mailbag then. Michael Fabiano with us. I guess I should ask you, you're hearing anything else? You're right there in the epicenter. Any other deals coming down before 1 o'clock that you're hearing?
You know, some of the deals that I wish would happen would involve running backs, but they're not going to happen. You know, Le'Veon Bell potentially getting moved. We've heard now that LeSean McCoy is not going to be traded. Those would have been two of the ones that I would have preferred to see. But right now, there's some rumors about potentially some defensive trades happening, but we haven't heard any names at this point. So. Mm-hmm. If the day went on and there wasn't another trade that involved an offensive skill position player, it was still a big day for trades from a fantasy perspective because these two moves alone have sort of moved values up and down pretty significantly.
Yeah, no, that's true. Mailbag, trade David Johnson and Diggs for Christian McCaffrey, yes or no?
No, I wouldn't do that. David Johnson, I get it. I mean, he hasn't been what we hoped, but he hasn't been terrible. And the schedule in the fantasy postseason for DJ is pretty good, so I would pass on that trade. It's too much.
Packers, other than Adams, with a PPR league that you'd look at?
Well, I mean, you're still starting Jimmy Graham, even though he's had one touchdown all season long. Tight end is a very thin position. But past Davante Adams, the second, third, and fourth wide receivers in Green Bay, I mean, it's hard to decipher. Geronimo Allison was supposedly that guy. He didn't do anything this past week. Randall Cobb's been very up and down, mostly down. You've got MVS there as well, the rookie who has shown some flashes. Very hard to trust anyone outside of Davante Adams. I will tell you this, and you know I've been screaming from the mountaintops, get Aaron Jones the football. They finally did. Mm-hmm. If he's a free agent, pick him up. If the Packers are smart, they'll start running this kid on a more regular basis and move on from Jamal Williams and Ty Montgomery.
A couple other questions for the Hall of Famer at the NFL Network and NFL.com. That's Michael Fabiano. He joins us every week. Screaming from the mountaintops. I'm sure that was you when you heard Amari Cooper going to Dallas. What do you do? What do you do with Amari Cooper? Do you play him this week?
You know what I was screaming? We gave a first-round pick for that guy? That's what I was screaming.
Right.
Because I was having like these images of Joey Galloway and Roy Williams, and people have been following the Cowboys for a while. They know why those two trades didn't really work out. I mean, like change of scenery-wise, I mean, it could be good. He should see targets in the offense, but I don't know that it's going to make a major difference. If he was a wide receiver three in Oakland, I would say he's probably still maybe a bit of an upgraded wide receiver three in Dallas, but this is an offense that runs through Ezekiel Elliott. For the Cowboys, it's a good move because, I mean, our number one wide receiver was Cole Beasley, and he's a slot guy.
Right.
But from a fantasy perspective, I don't really see this being a massive upgrade for Amari Cooper. It's not a downgrade, but I don't think it's a massive upgrade either. I think he's a three. Tough matchup this week against Tennessee, but we're in the middle of the bipocalypse, so you probably have to play him.
Been offered Julio Jones for Cohen. Fair deal?
Offered Julio for Cohen? Yes. Don't even listen to the show. Go to your computer and make the trade right now.
Done.
That is a perfect sell-high scenario. And I know Julio Jones hasn't scored a touchdown, but honestly, Brad, who cares? I mean, guy's having a huge season.
Yeah.
PPR leagues, he's still been a beast.
Standard league, Lockett or John Brown?
I'm going John Brown there. This week they play the Steelers, whose defense has not been good against the pass. Let's just put it that way. And, you know, Lockett, he had a touchdown. He's been getting into the end zone. I don't like his matchup as much playing against the Chargers at home this week.
Last question. I have Andy Dalton on a bye. Baker Mayfield change of coordinator and coach. What does Michael think I should do at quarterback this week?
Well, I mean, it really depends on what else is potentially out there because, again, it's thin. If you can pick up like an Alex Smith, he's got the Falcons this week. That can be a good alternative, but I mean, Baker's not actually a terrible option. The matchup is good, you know, that's for sure. Kansas City's defense has not been all that great, especially on the road. And, you know, I get it, new offensive coordinator, but, you know, Kitchens is sort of a Todd Haley disciple. So that offense might not change as much as you think. Maybe they lean a little bit more on the run because he's been a running backs coach, but I don't know that offense changes a whole heck of a lot.
Anything else catch your eye? It's in your wheelhouse this week, Michael.
Well, all these trades. I mean, that's been the biggest mover and shaker in terms of the fantasy landscape this week is the fact that teams are making deals. And I feel like from an NFL perspective, this is the one thing that the NFL missed out on that all the other big leagues have is, you know what? During the trade deadline in baseball, it's ridiculous. You know, basketball, even hockey, which I don't really follow that much. But now you have the NFL dipping its toe into these trade deadline moves, and it's been a lot of fun. One other thing, too, is that we've seen two quarterbacks who came into the season with question marks, Andrew Luck and Carson Wentz, both on byes this week, but they've both reestablished themselves as elite fantasy quarterbacks, which means you start them every single week. As far as the Cardinals go, Larry Fitzgerald's back.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
They're on a bye this week, but he's had two good games in a row, and hopefully Byron Leftwich continues to get Larry Fitz involved in the offense. I know Josh Rosen threw the ball, I believe, around 40 times this past week, but Fitzgerald is so good, even at an extended age, he needs to be out there as a big part of this offense, and hopefully, because he was getting dropped in a lot of leagues, hopefully people either kept him or picked him up off the waiver wire and will be able to utilize him in a more significant fashion moving forward, and the same thing goes with David Johnson. The points weren't there this week, but I still do feel like DJ is a guy that if I could get in a trade as a buy-low candidate based on what his schedule is in the fantasy playoffs, I would seriously consider it.
You got it, pal. Stay well. Thanks for the time on this trade deadline day.
All right, brother. Take care.
There's Michael Fabiano with us from the NFL Network, NFL.com, the Hall of Famer, Sports360AZ.com. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, all the sports from the basketball side all the way through. We've had the tennis coach on, we've had softball, we've had golf, men's and women's, great, all the sports at GCU. This week with the start of basketball season, Dan Marley is with us. Always good to have Coach Marley on board. We are now the Dan Marley warm-up show on certain nights on Fox Sports Arizona with the Brad Sussmat Football AZ show, which is fine. There's other nights where we're following Dan's show, which is now over on Fox Sports Arizona. So we just pray to God he has a good show because we want a number. That's right, Dan, right? I mean, you want it's all about
yeah,
the rating.
I'll try not to bring you down.
No, I've screwed you up already, I think, a couple times with the show last week.
You're good.
All right. Are you good? 71 wins in the last 3 years. It's hard to believe it's been 5 years for you. And is this team where you want it to be?
Oh, yeah. I think, 81 wins in that first 4 years of the transition period, which is by far the best that any college team's had in that transitioning from Division II to Division I. Last year was our first year eligible for the tournament. We got all the way to the conference finals where we lost to New Mexico State. Our goal was to go to the tournament our first year, which is a very, very lofty goal. But to be able to get all the way and lose to New Mexico State in the finals, I thought it was great. I thought that was really good steps for us, and it just primes us for being able to take off this year and be a little hungry and know what we want.
You have some additions I'll get to in a minute, but I want to talk about the returner in the middle. Alessandro is a player that if fans have not seen him as just a sophomore, how is he better now than he was after that New Mexico State game in Vegas?
Well, it's going to be harder for him to be better. This is a kid that when I first met him a year ago at the beginning of the season, I knew he was going to be good because of his work ethic. Came off the bench, continued to work really hard, and then about halfway through the season, I inserted him into the starting lineup. And during the WAC, the conference, he just really took off, and he became our go-to guy. We were able to post him up. He's got great footwork, can finish around the basket, and he's good enough where he can go out and stretch the three and carried us. He was the freshman of the year, his first team all WAC, and this year he's picked to be first team, and he's the player of the year favorite for the whole league. So he's going to have a tough year this year because he can't sneak up on everybody.
Yeah.
He's going to be on everybody's scouting report. He's going to be the first guy that everybody looks at. So I'm trying to prepare him for that. But as I said, he's a really hard worker. And the best thing about our team this year, he's going to be surrounded by some really good players. So by no means is he going to have to be the guy that gets all our points or be the go-to guy. Now we're going to throw the ball to him when we need a bucket, but he's going to be surrounded by some good players. So hopefully that'll help out.
Some fans have asked me, is he an NBA guy? What do you think, Dan? It's early for him, but what do you think?
Yeah, I can never say no about anybody. With his work ethic, he has to continue to work on his body, which he's done. The way he's able to shoot the ball in the NBA now with these bigs and stretching it, he can definitely do that. He's got to work on his toughness, which he's starting to do. And so you never know what's going to happen, but this is a guy that has a lot of skill and has got a great work ethic. So 2 or 3 years from now, he may be because he's going to work that hard.
Dan Marley with us, talk to the Lopes. Carlos Johnson, I had him on over the summer. We saw him, did stories on him at high school. Comes back from Washington. Pretty interesting story. Talented player. You appeal, you get him back. What's he going to bring to the team this year?
Yeah, we're excited, and I'm happy for Carlos. He's a guy that's been through a lot, and for him to be able to play this year, you can just see how that's affected him. And he's a guy that's going to give us another scorer down there. He's going to probably start at the two for us. He's really improved his shot. When he goes to the basket, he's very hard to stop. Ultra competitive. He's the kind of guy that you'd want in the foxhole with you no matter where you go. He's going to be very competitive and challenged and not shy away from any competition. So that gives us another guy that you want to go on the floor with, especially on the road. And you know you can get buckets out of him, but more than anything, he's going to be ultra competitive, and when you need to win a game, he's going to be one of the guys you want on the floor.
I could go down the list. I'm curious from your view, the player that so far in camp you've looked at and said, this guy is really making a push. This guy is making progress. Do you have one of those?
Yeah, I just think it's Roberts Blumberg who came along with Ali, who's also a sophomore. He's from Latvia. He was a freshman last year, another 6'10" shooter who started the first half of the year and just kind of really went into a slump and lost his confidence. He's had a really good summer. He went back home and played on his national team. He's been back, and he's been really exciting just watching him in practice. He's kind of turned the corner on how hard he has to play. He's really shooting the ball well. This is a guy that at the beginning is going to be coming off the bench for us but can really shoot it. And if he shoots like this in regular competition, he's going to be hard to stop. And the other guy is Michael Finke, the transfer from Illinois. He's another 6'10" that's going to start along with Ollie, who can really stretch the floor and shoot it. He's been at a big-time program. Tough kid, very smart. He's one of the guys that's going to take a lot of pressure off Ollie.
How about his little brother, Tim?
Tim is unbelievable. You know, he was a 4-star recruit. He's the highest recruit we've had thus far. We kind of snuck on him late. Probably one of the main reasons we were able to get Michael, because it's, you don't have a chance to play with your brother too often, so those two playing together. But he is just a hard-nosed, best rebounder on our team as a freshman. He's 6'7", just goes after it. Another ultra-competitive guy. So he's a guy that we're lucky to have for the next 4 years, and I can't wait to see how he develops.
A couple other questions for Dan Marley. Talk to the Lopes. You know, the whole thing about GCU was, years back, the next Gonzaga, the next Butler. Are you at that point where you feel like that narrative is behind you, or is it we got to get into the postseason to really make that narrative stick?
Well, that's what we want to do, and we're not there yet. And, you know, to think that we would be there in 6 years is naive, because that's not going to happen. It takes so long, especially when 4 of those years are you're not even eligible. Mm-hmm. Now that we are eligible, we're starting to knock on some recruits' doors that we weren't able to knock on before. You know, with our fan base and what we have going here with our campus, with what President Mueller has been able to do, I think the next step is, where I know the next step is for us to get in the tournament. And if we are able to do that and make some noise there, it's really going to open us up to the rest of the country. People know about us. So that is what we have to do. We want to start dominating the WAC, which, you know, the WAC has gotten so much better in the last 6 years. When I first got here, the RPI was 30, and last year I think it was either 14th or 15th. So the teams have gotten significantly better. So this league has really, really improved. So for us is to get in the tournament, make some noise, and continue to recruit, and hopefully be a top 25 team. And every year that we've been able to play, we've done a better job of that.
Where would you be if you didn't say yes back in March 2013? I was thinking about that today when I was going to talk to you. I'm sitting on a plane in Vegas, my phone rings, and it's Jerry Colangelo, and he said, let me explain to you what's going on with Dan. And I said, you don't need to explain what's going on with Dan because of what was going on at the time with you. If you hadn't taken this job, where do you think you'd be today?
I don't know. I'd probably be wiping down the bar top down at Marley's downtown, you know, waiting for the lunch crowd to leave. I don't know what I would have done. You know, I really got into coaching and I really enjoyed it because of the competitive side of me. I couldn't find anything that matched it. And, you know, I was doing TV and all those things, and that was fine. But to get back into coaching, the competitive side was unbelievable. So I would have found something else. I know I'm not a guy that's just going to sit around. I couldn't do that. My handicap would probably be a +2 instead of a 2. I know I'd be playing a lot more golf, but this has been a godsend, man, to be able to to work here, not only just be a coach, but to be at a coach at such a special university like this.
When you had to back off from the NBA and connect with college kids and high school kids, did you have any period of adjustment where you're like, because you have your own kids, I see you out of club stuff, watching your son and that, but did you have any of those moments like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to handle this whole recruiting thing?
No, I just flew into it like I do everything 100%, and then just learned along the way. I just knew I had to be true to myself and just trusted I'd figure it out, and I did. You know, I understood a few things that I did wrong early and how I had to get better, and I continue to get better, you know, every day and every year. And luckily I'm surrounded by a great support staff, not only with the president and his team, but the whole university and the staff that I've had here, you know, with TJ and Chris and Todd Lee, who's now gone to South Dakota. Now I got Lewis Wilson. All these guys have been tremendous support for me, and I continue to learn from them, and we get better. So I had no doubt that this is something I was going to be good at because I put all my soul, heart and soul into it, and I'm surrounded by really, really good people.
Yeah, you certainly have. Hey, appreciate the time and visit. I'll see you at some games. Thanks.
All right, Brad. Thank you.
Take care. It's Dan Marley with us. Mention the Dan Marley Show. It is on Fox Sports Arizona. Some nights it's on before us. Some nights it's on after us. But bottom line, it's good that they're there too. Sports360AZ.com. That is Talk to the